Hi, I'm Bella Gandhi, founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host of this beautiful podcast. We're here to bring more love into your life, regardless of if you're single, if you're married, if you're thinking about becoming single, if you're thinking about becoming married or finding the lid to your pot. And we're going to bring more life into that love that you have or you want. You might have seen me on Good Morning America or Steve Harvey or the Today Show or 100 other places. But I'm so happy that you are here with us because we're going to make your life and your love better. Smart daters, welcome back to this week's podcast. I am super excited for you guys and for myself to learn a prolific amount from this prolific author, my friend, Sam Horn. Sam is here with us. Sam has written 10 books, most recently, this amazing book called Talking on Eggshells. And I know we talk about walking on eggshells when we're talking about narcissists, but this is talking on eggshells. And Sam's book is chock full of gems. She's written, like I said, 10 total books, including one called Tung Fu. And she's going to tell us about this. Sam, you're amazing, a goddess. Thank you for being here with us.
I'm so glad to be here. I'm really looking forward to sharing some stories and insights with your listeners.
Well, that's fantastic. So tell us about what it means to talk on eggshells and what is Tung Fu?
You know, I was doing a workshop and a gentleman raised his hand and he said, you know, I work for a very tough boss and it seems like I can never say anything right. And I never know what's going to set him off. And we're all just walking around eggshells. And I said, oh, no, you're talking on eggshells. And I bet we all have at least one person in our life. And it seems they're so sensitive or we say something and they take it the wrong way. And talking on eggshells is so stressful. So this book is about what to say in those challenging moments instead of thinking of the perfect response on the way home.
I love that. And this is something you had to learn yourself. You didn't grow up in an environment that said, let's talk about how to have great relationships and communicate.
You know, we all have a habitual conflict resolution style. And for many of us, like I grew up in a Cold War. My dad was emotionally distant and my mom was emotionally wounded. And they were very good people. They just didn't talk to each other. I remember road trips with hours and hours of silence. And so we didn't say anything because we were so afraid of like, you know, how are they going to react? And then I was in a relationship with a controller. And I thought when he planned every detail of my dates, cool, right? Nope.
Not so much.
Red alert. Should have read that sign. And so I learned in two of the major relationships of my life to always worry and wonder about what I was saying, whether it was right, whether it was wrong. And this book hopefully is an antidote to that so that people don't have to deal with that and all the stress that comes with it.
Well, wonderful. So you say that we need to get comfortable with conflict. Let's start there. Like conflict is inevitable in all relationships, right? Whether you have a parent, a child, a partner, a girlfriend, a spouse, a best friend, conflict, you put two humans together in a relationship, there will be conflict. And if there isn't, somebody is giving in and not using their voice.
That's right. They're either avoiding or accommodating, giving in to go along and or getting angry and upset, withdrawing, retreating. None of that works. So unless people are driving, I hope they get a piece of paper and put a vertical line down the center. And on the left, we're going to talk about words and reactions to lose. And over on the right, words and responses to use. So that we're going to talk about arguing and complaining and what to do if people are blaming us for something that's not our fault or accusing us of something that's not true. And we'll talk about what not to do and what to do. Sound good?
Sounds amazing. So tell us a situation that we could all use some tips, myself included. I have a husband. I have two teenagers. I have a mother. I have a father. I have a brother, a sister-in-law, and lots of friends. Give us your gem, Sam Horn.
Okay, so let's put conflict on the left and let's put clarifying conversation on the right. Okay. Now, you already feel the difference, right? Because if we're conflict averse, we head the other direction. So how this works is I'll tell a short 60-second story, then we'll unpack it so we can apply it in our life, whether it's with a new boyfriend, whether it's a husband, whether it's someone at work, whether it's an adult child. Sound good?
Sound perfect.
Okay. So there was a young woman, and she was working at Salvation Army, and she had learning disabilities. And so holding a job was very difficult for her. And yet she'd really applied herself, and her supervisor told her she was up for promotion. She was thrilled. Uh-huh. The very next day, her supervisor told her she was in danger of getting fired. Now, over on the left, that's a conflict that we feel that it's wrong, unfair, undeserved. And what many people do and what Bethany would have done before, she would have maybe quit. She would have gone home, dissolved into tears, rehashed what happened, you know, maybe fallen into depression. Guess what? Her therapist had given her four words that help us turn a conflict into a clarifying conversation. She went back to her boss the next day and she said, "Help me understand, please help me understand how I could be up for promotion yesterday and in danger of losing my job today." And her boss said, well, a customer had complained how rude she was, and Bethany remembered the situation. The customer tried to bring back a used mattress with the cover off. Store policy can't do that. She'd politely tried to explain it. He left in a huff and reported her for being rude. Ah, now that the boss knew the real reason what had happened, she apologized to Bethany, gave her the promotion, and thanked her for enforcing the policy. And next time we're in a conflict, instead of withdrawing, retreating, getting upset, whatever, those words, "Could you please help me understand?
Could you please help me understand?" That's so, it's seismic. I feel myself shifting because when something hits me, I get goosebumps in my arms, and I have goosebumps in my arms right now. "Could you please help me understand, dear teenager, why you broke curfew last night and you said you wouldn't?"
Look, now we have a clarifying conversation, right? It's not side against side. We're on the same side. We're seeking to understand. So now here's another situation that follows up on that. Sound good?
Awesome.
All right. Over on the left, please put wrong. Something has gone wrong. And as Elvis said, when things go wrong, don't go with them. So when something goes wrong, often we get upset and like we attack or accuse. "How could you do that? That's so unfair. I can't believe you said that." And we attack, which escalates it, right?
100%.
We are going to become a pattern interrupt, Bella. We're going to, do you play sports by any chance?
Not well, but okay. I do.
Okay. Then, you know, how does a referee, if people are getting into it, how does a referee stop it or intervene?
Blows their whistle, says timeout.
That's right. They actually, this is a physical pattern interrupt. Next time people are getting into it, actually make a T and say time out, and then say these words: "This won't help. Yelling at each other won't help." Or say, "Let's not do this." Say, "Let's not do this." Blaming each other won't undo what happened. Instead, let's. And you see how, you know, people are getting into it. Pattern interrupt or stop, like, or enough, or yo. Now switch the attention to what we do want to have happen instead of what didn't happen that we're upset about.
That's so great. I know in our house, we do something called escalation and de-escalation. So when words start to get hot and heavy, and because we can all push each other's buttons, you know, you're married, you raised two boys, and it takes about 7.5 milliseconds for someone to really push that button, right? And here we, you know, in fact, last night, I was having a conversation with my 19-year-old about breaking curfew, and we were very peaceful. And Andy, my husband, came in, and he's the loveliest human, and he can be incredibly lovely or he can get really angry, right? Just, and he started getting a little bit, you know, we could tell tensions were getting high. And my daughter looked at me and she pointed at him and she says, "Why is he escalating?" She wow. was calm. She said it to me. And I looked at him. I said, "You're escalating. Maybe you need a break." And he smiled because she called the escalation. We've been doing this. I said to them, my visual is when someone says stop or de-escalate, we're like boxers going back to our corners. Let cooler heads prevail. And then we can come back and speak rationally, take a pause. And that brought his temperature down, Sam, in half, because his own daughter said, and the one who was in trouble said, "Why is he escalating? We're talking, we're wrapped up in blankets, having an adult conversation about why she did this." And so, yes, you're right. Pattern interrupt is great. I didn't realize that's what that was, but that's a great way to think about it. It's like stop going down the old bad pathways that we go down really fast.
And so let's, over on the left, what you did over on the left is play the game, right? People are manipulating us, controlling us, guilt tripping us or something like that. And we play the game, defend whatever. Over on the right, we name the game. It's like, hey, don't put me in the middle on this one, right? It's like a bartender said, the hardest part of my job is all my friends who come in and want a free drink. And I said, name the game. Say, hey, you're not asking for a free drink, are you? Not anymore. They're not.
That's right. You're not doing it. You wouldn't ask for a free drink. You wouldn't complain about your meal when there's no bites left on the plate because you were looking for a free meal. Now, would you? With a smile on your face. Like Southern women, they smile while they say everything. Bless your heart. You wouldn't be doing that, would you?
You know, Melissa Rivers has a great quote about her mom, Joan Rivers. She said, "My mother was a travel agent for guilt trips." So if we know someone who is a travel agent for guilt trips, name the game. Oh, guilt. That doesn't work anymore. What else you got, right? You know, it's like, are you taking your bad day out on me? You know, it's like, are you trying to make me feel bad? You know, whatever. Not anymore. They're not. When you name the game, you neutralize the game.
Absolutely. You know, in the same conversation with my daughter, and one of her big strategies, some people call it projection. I call it deflecting. Well, if I stay out late, it's because my friend Allie stays out. And you know how late Megan stays out? I said, you're deflecting. Let's come back to you.
Is it
good? Name the game.
So, over on the left, let's put find fault. Over on the right, put find solutions. Mm. Right? John F. Kennedy said, our task is not to fix the blame for the past. It's to fix the course for the future. So having raised a couple of teenagers, it's like when they would start in all the excuses, right? Because they think, oh, if I understand their excuse or their reason, you know, well, Chuck Yeager said, at the moment of truth, there are either reasons or results. So we shift over here from reasons to results. We shift from excuses to action. And when they're going on and on and on about why they didn't do what they were supposed to do, we wait, and then do you know what we say?
What's that?
What was our agreement?
Mm.
What was our agreement? Do you see how you have just shifted the conversation back to the results and the action or the agreement instead of all the reasons?
Finger pointing. Right, and the blaming and the deflecting.
Yes.
I love that. Well, let's talk about interpersonal situational awareness. Tell us what that is. And you have so many great anecdotes in talking on eggshells about this. So I hand you the mic.
Well, first, let me tell a story about me, about when I did not have interpersonal situational awareness. Right out of college, I got a job with Rod Laver, tennis championship Rod Laver. on Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. Well, they put me in charge of representing our tennis resort at the island board meeting. So I was young, Bella. I was eager. Forgive me.
I can only imagine a young Sam Horn, like full of sizzle, dazzle, sparkle, and energy.
Well, I had lots of ideas and I was pretty free sharing them. And after about three meetings, thank heaven for Dale Schutte, who is the general manager of the Palmetto Dunes Hyatt. And he pulled me aside and he said, Sam, you might want to sit on your hands for a few meetings. Now, I'd never heard that expression before. Essentially, he said, Sam, everyone in that room is senior to you and you're doing more talking than them. He said, it's time to listen and only offer something if you add value. Ask yourself, is it timely? Is it welcome? Is it additive? So let's think about relationships, Bella. So often, especially if we've been around someone for a while, we're familiar, we just blurt, right? And when we blurt, people get hurt. We just say what's on our mind. We just talk about what happened that day. We talk about traffic. We never ask ourselves, is it welcome? Do they want to hear it? Is it additive? You know, is it good timing? We're not reading the river. And another quick anecdote for so that people can really get this idea of ISA, interpersonal situational awareness, in their mind. When I was in high school, my first boyfriend was a boatman, and we would head to the Stanislaus River every weekend. And what did I learn from boatmen? They're always reading the river. Right there. Oh, I hear a big roar ahead. That means there's a rapid. Now, there's not normally a rapid there. So I'm going to pull over, get out, walk around and scout that rapid instead of just blunder into it. Wait a minute here. Where's the current? Where's the V? Ah, I'm going to align with the current because it's easier to row when you go with the flow, except if the current carries me into a canyon wall. Do you see how if we can read the room, we can lead the room? So what I'm asking all of us to do is in a relationships is like, is someone's, are they clenching their teeth? Is their jaw tight? You know, can we see that we're talking and they're 1,000 miles away? Can we see that we're in a meeting and we're doing more talking than anyone else? How can we read the room, adapt accordingly so that we're being additive instead of an annoyance?
Ooh, I love that. So it's have a look around at the people that you're with and see if they look happy, if they look excited, do they look anxious, do they look worried? So maybe if you have, you know, bad news to share with somebody and they already look sad, maybe now is not the right time to put that on their shoulders.
See, you know, Richard Branson said, time is the new money. And I think that time is the new trust. And when we're with a person, most of the time, they're preoccupied with what's going on in their life, their priorities, their needs. And if we just start talking a lot of time, it's not appropriate or welcome or additive. So as you said, what if, though, we want to talk about something? We did what you did earlier. We asked, hey, I've had one of those kind of days. Can I have 5 minutes just to vent? And then I promise I'll put a sock in it. It's like, hey, it looks like something's going on with you. What's that? Well, you know, I just found out that da 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 da. See, once we find out their agenda, it may take priority over our agenda. We put it aside. What we're doing, though, is that we're looking around and we're doing what Desmond Tutu said. He said, we've got to stop pulling people out of the river. We've got to go upstream and find out where they're falling in. And this is a way of thinking upstream. And if we do this in relationships, we are taking care of them in a way that we're being considerate and conscious of others instead of just doing what we want when we want.
No, that's so true. You know, my friend Trish is awesome and she's witty and funny and smart. And there are times where I'll ask her a question, you know, like, should I do this? And she will ask me the most brilliant question. She says, Bella, what kind of friend do you want me to be right now? Wow. How powerful is that? And I've been using that everywhere I go, I have been asking my clients when things aren't going well, if they're in a dating dry spell, if they're complaining about something, or I just don't know. I'm like, can you tell me right now, how can I be the best coach to you? They have the answers. And to your point about interpersonal situational awareness, sometimes you might be able to read it. But if you don't know, ask the question, what kind of a friend do you want me to be right now? What kind of a mom do you want me to be right now? What kind of a coach do you want me to be right now? And that will show that person that you have the E word, empathy, for them.
Well, let's talk about empathy, shall we?
Let's go there.
Over on the left, let's put impatience, and over on the right, put empathy. In fact, over on the left, put contempt, and over on the right, put compassion. Mm. And there are four words that can shift us from impatience to empathy. And you know what they are?
No, tell me.
How would I feel?
Arm goosebumps again. Arm goosebumps. I wish you guys could see me. How would I feel? Dang. Wow. Just wow.
And here's a 60-second story that shows the shift that this makes from being frustrated, from being impatient, you know, is that a gentleman said this changed his relationship with his mother. He said, my mom is in a rest home and I drive out every Saturday to see her and I have to force myself to do it because all she ever does is complain. And he said, when you put those four words up there, I asked myself, how would I feel if I were in bed 18 hours a day, 7 days a week? How would I feel if I had to live right next to someone and she played the TV so loud I couldn't even hear myself think? How would I feel if days went by and no one came to see me, said, Sam, it got me right out of my frustration. And then he said, you had said, instead of complaining about what you don't like, create what you would like. And I had said, if you don't like your mother complaining, if you're feeling frustrated with her or impatient, what would you like? And he thought about it and he said, well, I'd like to talk about all our good times, our memories. I said, take out a photo album. Because Queen Elizabeth said, good memories are our second chance at happiness. Mm. And he got back in touch and he said, Sam, I took that photo album. One picture of this crazy uncle we had us laughing so our tears were streaming down our face. One picture of this mountain cabin we went to every summer brought back a whole hour of memories. So once again, if we're frustrated with someone, we're probably only seeing it from our point of view. How would I feel if I were in their shoes? May not like it and may not agree with it. We may understand it, which gives us the incentive to be more compassionate instead of contemptuous.
I love that. I love that so much. And you told a great story, if you don't mind sharing it on Talking in Eggshells, about a woman who went into the ER.
This is, are you ready? Because these techniques work at all ages and stages. This is my 84-year-old Aunt Kay, and she volunteers at a hospital 5 days a week, even during COVID. And I asked what it was like, and she said one word, stressful. I said, well, think of a situation that was really stressful. She didn't even have to think about it. She said, last week, a woman came running into the ER, to the help desk. She said, I just got a text from my daughter. She was in a car accident. She's in the ER. I got to see her. Well, Aunt Kay called, and you may remember the rules during COVID.
Sure do.
One visitor per patient or no visitors. There was somebody already with the daughter, and she had to tell the mom she couldn't get in to see her. Well, understandably, the woman lost it, and she's screaming and crying. And now those four words again. Instead of thinking, why are you yelling at me? It's not my fault. I didn't make the rules. See, all of those reactions make it worse, right?
Yeah.
Instead, how would I feel if my daughter were in the ER and I couldn't get in to see her? And Bella, it gave her the incentive to turn, there's nothing I can do, to let me see if there's something I can do. She called the ER back. She said, who is with the daughter? It was the Uber driver who had brought the young woman in. Kay was able to explain the situation, thank him, he left, and the mom was able to get in with the daughter once again, because instead of, it's not my fault, don't blame me, how could you say that? How would I feel? Ah, let me see if there's something I can do instead of nothing I can do.
Amazing, amazing. And ladies and gentlemen, you can think about this even while you're on your dates. Can you imagine if we could, okay, how would I feel if you're sitting across from somebody, and I'm just conjuring up images right now, you walk into a date and there's someone who looks super anxious, right? Or what, how do we shift this situation? Or somebody that just won't stop talking. Very common. Sorry, guys. Lots and lots of women will go on these dates and say, wow, I just had a 2-hour therapy session where I was the therapist for someone who wouldn't stop talking. Even when I tried to redirect the conversation, Bella, as you said, we had a guest on some months ago. His name is Larry Kaufman. And he said, some people just show up and throw up.
Oh, that's memorable and unfortunately often true. So, well, would you like to know what to do if someone is going on and on and on?
I would love that.
By the way, the comedian Paula Poundstone has a great line about this. She says, you know what we need? A 12-step group for nonstop talkers. We're going to call it On and On. Anon.
That's great.
So over on the left, what if someone's going on and on and on? Now, Bella, we've been told to never interrupt, that it's rude to interrupt, right?
Yes.
I think it can be right to interrupt, not rude. Now, picture the old-fashioned scales of justice. Remember the Lady of Justice with the two plates like this?
Sure.
I think the success of any relationship, whether it's the first date, whether it's the first year, whether it's whatever, is whether the scale of needs is kept in balance. See, if we're out on a date and the other person is talking, their needs are getting met. What about your needs? You know, it's like chances are you won't go on another date again. Chances are you're simmering in silence. Chances are you're resenting them. It is not rude of you to interrupt when the scale of needs is out of balance. It's right. Now, here's what you do. Use their name, because if we just start talking over them, what will they do? They'll talk louder.
Right. Right. Or they'll go, gosh, that's so rude. I was in the middle of a story.
That's exactly right.
How could you interrupt me?
That's right. So we say Scott or Sally, because when people hear their name, it causes a pause. That's a chance to get our verbal foot in the door. Now, we do either two things. If it's a relationship, we paraphrase what it is we said. Wow, it sounds like things are really difficult with your brother these days. Or, wow, it really sounds like that person took their anger out on you and that wasn't fair. Because if we don't paraphrase what they said, we are yanking the conversational ball right out from underneath them, right? So paraphrase what it is they said so they know we've been listening. Then you say, you know what? If there's action to be taken, we say, as soon as we finish this conversation, I'm going to make a note and get in touch with that person. Or as soon as this call is over, I'm going to talk with. If there's action, say it. If there's not, you say, you know what? I had something like that happen to me too. Is it okay if I share it and ask permission to give your, or if they're kvetching and going on and on and on and on, we say, you know, Aunt Vera, I can understand that your everything aches and you are sad about not being able to get around the way you're used to. And let's talk about what's right in our life. Because I think the more we dwell on that, the more it brings both of us down. And that doesn't serve any good purpose. We've got about a half an hour more in this visit. And, you know, and your granddaughter just had a birthday. Or can I tell you about my trip that I've got coming out? So that we show some empathy and then we shift And we can be a pattern interrupt to people who go on and on and on. And many times they'll be grateful because now we have a balanced conversation instead of a monologue.
I love how you did that so adroitly. You paraphrased what Aunt Vera was doing. You gave her empathy, but then you built a very quick strategic bridge. What I would love to do, we can sit and stew in all that's negative, which is only going to make us feel worse. Something that I like to do is think about what's going right. What am I looking forward to? Because it puts me in a better frame of mind. Are you with me?
Yes.
Let's do that. I love your technique of asking for permission. Are you with me? Is that good? Let's talk about what's going right. That's great. And that's how you can get negative people back into the positive. First, I love that you use your empathy in the case of that gentleman. How would my mom feel? 18 hours a day, locked in a room with, you know, someone who watches TV that's too loud. Wow, that would be really, really vexing, right? And then paraphrasing what they're saying and then changing it. And that abruptly, but in a very kind way that shows them what's in it for them.
See, what you're discussing is what's called proactive grace in the book. And let's over on the left, put complain. What can we do if someone complains, right? Say yeah. that we're supposed to pick up our date downtown and we leave in plenty of time. There's an accident on the freeway. It's gridlock. Our phone is dead. We can't let him know. We get there an hour late. We pull up. She yanks the car door open. She says, "You are supposed to be here an hour ago." Well, over on the left, put explain, because we often think if we explain why we didn't do what we were supposed to do, people will forgive us. Explanations come across as excuses because they feel we're not being accountable. Over on the right, take the A train. Write down three A's. A for agree, A for apologize, A for act. Here are two relationship-saving words. Next time someone complains, ask ourselves, is what they're saying basically true? Most of the time it is. That's why they're complaining. Say, "You're right. I was supposed to pick you up an hour ago." A for apologize, and "I'm sorry you ended up waiting so long." A for act, and "From now on, if I'm going to try and pick you up on a Friday night, I'm building in a cushion for Murphy's Law." Now that we're accountable and that we commiserate with their inconvenience, they're more likely to say, "Well, you couldn't do anything about it," instead of, you know, "Well, how was I supposed to know? Well, my phone was dead. It wasn't, you know," back and forth. That's what happens when we try and explain what went wrong. Nope, take the A train. It expedites complaints. Explanations aggravate them.
And the A train, I wrote this down. I'm going to put it in the show notes. Agree, say, "You're right." Apologize, "I am so sorry. I'm an hour late." Act, "Next time on a Friday, I'm going to make sure I leave and 2 hours before I'm supposed to get you. Next time I'm going to give you money for an Uber."
You know, and Bella, especially sometimes people say, "Why should I apologize? I didn't do anything wrong, or it wasn't my fault." And I bet you've heard the old adage, "You can be right or you can be happy," right?
100%.
And when we're apologizing, we're not saying it's our fault. We're once again putting ourselves in their shoes, imagining what it was like for her for an hour to not know if we were in some ditch somewhere or if we had ditched her. All we're doing is commiserating with their inconvenience. And when we do that, they will feel seen and heard and understood. And now they're ready to move on.
And it's so elegant and authentic and lovely. And I love how you're so pithy in the things that you say, right? You get right to it. I think you call it in the book, infobesity, talking too much about something. And even in the desire to apologize or be right, we can add a whole bunch of stuff that might just inadvertently piss someone off. Here, agree, "You are right. I am so sorry." Don't make the excuses. Even if traffic sucked, which it always does. I live in Chicago. There's four seasons of traffic here, yeah. Right? Yeah. And that's it. Don't make excuses. later after you've done that and you've gotten them to put their dukes down, put their weapons down, right? When yes. you, all they need to hear is you're right and I'm sorry. Then you can say, traffic was such a beast. I had no anticipation that it would be so bad.
See, you and I are talking about the power of words. And would you like a story where one word completely transformed what was happening?
Please. I would love as many stories as you have up your sleeve.
Okay. So I had flown to New York to visit my son, Andrew Horn, and his son, Hero, was a year old. So we're getting caught up in the living room. Hero crawls across the floor, pulls himself up on a guitar that's on a stand in the corner and starts pounding on the strings. Now that's over on the left. Things are going wrong, right? And the reaction is no, stop, to yank the guitar away, leave the guitar alone, all of which would have escalated, made the situation worse. Instead, Andrew said one word. You know what the word was? Gentle. And I saw Hero's face transform in front of me. And he reached back out to the guitar and he went strum, strum, strum. He reached up to some bells on the window and went ring, ring, ring. And it was because in that moment, Andrew chose one word that shaped his behavior instead of shamed his behavior. My dad used to say, you can't motivate someone to do better by making him feel bad. And over on the left, when we criticize somebody for what they did wrong, tell them to not do it, to stop doing it, we actually reinforce the dreaded behavior. If instead, no, what do we want them to do? What's a word that paints an image of what we want them to start doing? We actually reinforce the desired behavior. We're a coach instead of a critic. They learn from mistakes instead of lose face over mistakes. And they know how to do it better instead of just feeling bad.
I love that. Well, can I ask you a personal question around this?
Sure, sure.
So with the 15-year-old and a 19-year-old, we have pretty good rules of engagements about conflict in our house.
Yes.
And so, however, they're kids and they want to be right, even if they know that's not always the right thing. Yeah. We have a code word in our house created by me when their words, I say, your words are knives. And even though somebody can forgive you, knives will leave scars on our skin. And so my code word, when they start being aggressive with their words and it gets hurtful, I put my hand up. I said, you're going hard. Is that what you want? You're going hard. And that's, so I guess in Sam Horn speak, that's a pattern interrupt.
Yes.
So I don't know, is it okay to say it that way? You're going hard. Or is it better for me to say something about shaping their behavior, like be gentle with your words?
What a great, first, you're a Tung Fu black belt, Bella. I think your kids are very fortunate to have your centered wisdom and example. You know, Albert Schweitzer said, in influencing others, example is not the main thing. It's the only thing. And the example you're setting about respect. So, okay. So over on the left, number one is accuse, but however you ask, right? You said, you're going hard. Is that what you want? So see, you're asking, which is a dialogue instead of you're going hard. And see, that's an accusation. If you just leave it there,
sometimes I might just say you're going hard, honestly, right, in the heat of the moment, just to, because it's like, it's bringing awareness without going hard on them. This is hurting me. You're going hard. And maybe because I've said it so often, they do usually shift at that point. But I do think you're right. Asking, is that your intention? Is that what you want?
And there's more than one right answer, right? So that's a right answer. I think another right answer, especially because words matter, they set up ripple effects, is like just to look at them and say, respect, right?
Respect.
respect, because see, that's what you want to imprint, right? Is that, you know, it's, and the words you need to calm down, whoo boy, do those backfire, because it's an order, right? You need to calm down. No. Just eyebrows up, respect. Is it, and there's another one as well, is that in the heat of the moment, I know someone who went through a very difficult divorce recently, and it really got crunchy. And it's very easy in those circumstances to get vengeful and vindictive, right? And they're wrong and then all that. And I kept sharing a quote from my friend, maybe you know her, Mary Morrissey. And she says, hold the vision, not the circumstances. Hold the vision, not the circumstances. Now, Bella, what you and I are talking about may sound like platitudes or cliches or Pollyanna. All I know is that these two people who were 6 months ago, like this, are now co-parenting their child. They're now both happier and healthier. And it was because when they were tempted to go there, hold the vision, not the circumstances.
And the vision for them, let's unpack that a little bit for people. Hold the vision, not the circumstances. The vision is, I want this to be peaceful, and I want us to maintain as good of a relationship as we can as co-parents.
That's correct. Vision?
Okay.
I want us on the other side of this to be the friends that we were when we met each other. You know, I want on the other side of this to set an example for Hero, that you, instead of staying in a toxic relationship, you try your best to heal it. And if it isn't better, then you get out of a toxic situation. Yeah. I want a model for Hero. The vision is that people treat each other with respect. And so do you see, when we have the clarity of what we do want, and when we're getting pulled in other directions, and it's so doggone tempting, if we have that clarity of how we want to show up, it really becomes a North Star.
I love that. And speaking of these hard conversations and things that get crunchy, you have something called the 4-step plan, P-L-A-N. I love how you have these great mnemonic devices to help people remember these things in the heat of the moment. Can you tell us about this? Maybe what it is, give us an example in a way that we can all maybe use, like in 5 minutes once we're done listening to this podcast.
You bet. Well, can I give you a quick example of that?
You know, my answer to that will be a resounding yes.
Okay. Here's a way that we can plan for a tough conversation. Maybe we're going into a negotiation or an interview or a presentation or a performance evaluation or a mediation or something like that. I suggest if we fail to plan, we've all heard, if we fail to plan, we plan to fail, right? So I suggest something called a W5 form. And it's WWWW. It's what? Okay, so what's the situation? You know, is this a negotiation? Is this a mediation? Is this a whatever? And here, Bella, in that first W, what is the action I want people to take? What is the change I want them to make? So at the end of this mediation or negotiation or whatever, what's the act? Okay, you got it. Next is the W is the who, all right? Who are the decision makers here, or who is in this mediation with me? And we ask ourselves, what is their mood? Are they locked in and they're going to say no over money or no over possessions or no over the dog or whatever? I believe that objections are answers to the test. And if we know who we're dealing with and their needs and interests and priorities, we can often unblock a blockade. And I'll give an example of this in a moment. Sound good?
Sure.
The next W is where and when. Where and when is this taking place? Because I was speaking for the Cisco channel, the 435 top executives at Cisco, and one of the department heads got in touch, and he was having an all hands meeting on Friday and wanted to prepare. I asked him, what time is it? And he said, 4:00 on a Friday afternoon. I said, Dad, no one's going to be paying attention. They're going to have one foot out the door. So you get ahead of that. Don't have your phone. Wear a watch. And the first words out of your mouth are you anticipate and voice their objections. You say, I can only imagine, not I know you're thinking, that's presumptuous, right? No, I can only imagine you're thinking it's 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. These things normally go for a couple hours. I'm making a promise to you right now. We're going to bring this in under an hour. I promise you will be out of here by 5 o'clock. Rock and roll, let's go. Guess who won buy-in in the first 60 seconds? Because he'd read the room and then he led the room, right? By understanding who was in the room and how they were feeling and how he could prevent a catastrophe. So that's the who and the where and when is this taking place. It matters. Next is, why will it be an ROI for them? What are three reasons they would say yes to this, that they would agree to this? As you've mentioned, this gets us out of, well, I'm not budging on this, as well, you know, I paid for that. She doesn't deserve any part of that. That kind of locked in position. No, this forces us to put ourselves in their mind and think, why would they say yes? What would they agree to? Why will this be a win for them? Why will this give them what they want so we can bake it into what we say? And now the last W, why will it be an ROI for us? And Bella, we never walk into a high-stakes situations with only one outcome in mind. Because if that doesn't happen, failure, right? And then we just keep repeating ourselves because we only got one game plan. So what are three options, all of which I'm comfortable with? Because then in the discussion, if we can see that they're not moving on this, we can pivot to something else that's still a win for us that gives them something different they want, because obviously they're not listening to this one over here. And if we plan ahead, and you may be thinking, wow, that takes a lot of time. Well, maybe 5 minutes, and 5 minutes to increase the likelihood that we walk out of that situation with what we want and they get what they want. So we're on the same side instead of side against side. That's worth it.
Right. Your five W's are then seven W's with the win-win.
Woo, she's quick. She's quick.
and that's what you get. And I think that it's so important. And I shared with Sam before we were recording this podcast that in reading her book over the last several days, it really helped me to think about things more effectively, even when I was having some difficulties with my 19-year-old. And I thought to myself, if she's breaking her curfew, okay, and Sam says, what do they want? What is the person you're talking to? What are their priorities? What are their interests? And what are their needs? And that was such a shift for me to go, okay, she's doing this. What's important to her? Having fun, being with her friends, connecting in an environment that 19 and a half and 20 year olds want to be in, right? When they have not had any supervision for 9 months and have been living in and out, coming and going as they please. It's like, okay, now I'm understanding from her perspective why it shouldn't be a big deal to me. Mom, I've been on my own for 9 months. I got straight A's. Why are you guys doing this? And so to be able to make that shift helped me to have a very much better targeted conversation with her that was a win-win. We don't want to control you. I understand it is important to you to connect with your friends in an environment that they want to be in to have fun because you're at home for these 3 months. What we need to do is make sure that you're safe. We don't want to control you. We don't want to micromanage you. I just don't want, we live in a big city. We don't live in the suburbs, right? Where it's quiet and safe. We live right downtown and along, there's so much great activity, but there's an underbelly to that as well. I'm like, how do we make sure that we're all happy and we maintain the culture of the house? Because we love having you here.
You know, Bella.
Thank you. Thank you for your help.
Well, I'm so glad people are having an opportunity to listen to what could be a hard conversation and the way you're navigating through it by communicating fully so that she gets the underlying wants. You know, Esther Perel said, behind every criticism is a veiled wish. Ooh, is that powerful? Wow. So see, what you're doing here is you're going to the veiled wish. And, you know, there's a word that hasn't been mentioned yet that I think is also a key word in this relationship and discussion. You know what the word is?
No.
Okay, 60-second story, will come to the word. There was a woman who told me, Sam, I've got two 16-year-old twin daughters. They're getting their driver's license at the same time. They're dating at the same time. She says, I'm a nervous wreck. She said, when they're out on dates, I'm just like, you know, thinking, oh, my gosh. Blah, blah, blah. And she said, my girls came home one night, and I was really upset because they had broken curfew, and I lit into them. And my daughter said something that was probably the most important message of my parenting. My daughter said, Mom, you think by worrying about us, you're showing us how much you love us. You're showing us you don't trust us. And so we talked about the word worry. I just can't stop worrying. What if something? And of course, the more we worry, the more we worry, right? So it's like, no, worry is those words on the left. Don't be late. Don't interrupt me. Don't get mad. You know, don't run around the pool. Don't worry. No, go over to the right. What do you want? Trust. It's about trust. And you use the word safe. We want you to be safe. Use the words, we're so glad that you're here. You know, is that we trust you to use your good judgment. Wow. Look at the word seeds that you're planting in that relationship.
With your help in this book, it was the best conversation we've had around this. So thank you. And I hope for those of you that are listening, mine might have been my daughter, Jaden, this weekend. But for you, there's someone in your life that is frictional. Maybe, you know, as my mom calls it, the pebble in your shoe person, right? The person that just gets under your skin a little bit. But if you can take yourself out of yourself, like Sam is saying, have empathy, say, how do they feel? And closely related to how do they feel, what do they want? Right? And that's the next bridge. Every conflict and every conversation you have can be made, I believe, so much easier, so much less conflictual, if that's a word, less abrasive. And you can really be graceful with that relationship and take it to the next level and have that person say, wow, you handled that really nicely. Thank you for that. That could have gone really badly.
You know, Pema Chodron says, do not let people pull you into their storm. Pull them into your peace. And the words and responses are the right, are to pull ourselves and other people into peace, into cooperation, you know, into compassion, into kindness and empathy. And it matters. It's, you know, circling back to something that you were saying at the beginning of our talk today, as I was at Dulles Airport a couple of days ago, and with the wildfires in Canada, you know, it's really disrupted travel. The man in front of me was yelling at the customer service agent, the gate agent, saying, you know, this is ruining our vacation. Why didn't you tell us before so we could have made other plans? I'm never going to fly blank, blank again. And when he left, she is my turn. And she looked at me and she was like, you know, stealing herself for another onslaught, right? And I said these words. Nine words. Ready?
Yeah.
Has it been one of those kind of days? And Bella, she just melted. You know, it's like, oh, we're doing the best we can. You know, it's like, and it puts us, those words, all these words and responses we're talking about on the right, trust and safe and you're right and how would I feel? They not only pull us and others into our peace, they really do create the quality of relationships we all want. Sometimes we just don't know how because no one ever taught us.
No, you're right. And one phrase that you said in the book just stuck with me. I was talking to my sister-in-law about it. And you say people, you know, we always say fight fire with fire. And you say, actually, fight fire with water. I was like, mic drop, Sam Horn. Fight fire with water. You know, to your point, my husband years ago was traveling with the partner on his job. And the partner was very known for having a temper. And everybody walked on eggshells around this guy. And so their flight was delayed. And they were, you know, somewhere on the East Coast trying to get home. It was stormy. And so the partner, of course, went in front of my husband, was like, I need to get on this plane. I can't believe, you know, started berating the gate agent. And she said, Mr. So-and-so, you're on the list. We'll let you know if we can do anything for you. And then my husband, who knew better, and said, okay, I'm going to fight fire with water. And he said to her, wow, you did a great job. That was hard. And she said to him, Mr. Anacone, there happens to be a seat on this plane, one left. May I offer you an aisle seat? The partner did not make the flight. My husband got home.
Words have ripple effects, don't they? In fact, Mother Teresa said, the world is full of good people. If you can't find one, be one. And that's the river that runs through our conversation, isn't it? Is that it matters. You know, how we show up, it influences our date, it influences our partner, it influences our family, it influences gate agents. It really, I think the world is so needy, in need of individuals who choose to go first and set an example of kindness and compassion. And I think when they experience it, they're a lot more likely to respond in kind.
I love that. Sam, you are brilliant. Thank you for being with us. And can we order this brilliant book? Tell us where we can get it. We'll put links in the show notes. Amazon, your site?
Well, both. In fact, they can go to Amazon if they want the book right now, because, you know, it'll show up in within 24 hours. And if they want some of these quotes that we've been sharing, if they want to see like a TEDx talk that I gave on this, they're welcome to go to samhorn.com. And in fact, we have an offer, Bella. It's free for anyone who would like it. Shall we share that?
Share with me. I want it too.
Okay. You know, we've been talking about words to lose and words to use. And if you just go to Sam at samhorn.com and ask for the words to lose, we'll send you a reminder card. You can actually put it on your refrigerator. It helps everyone catch and correct. It's like, well, I know it's important to you, but it's like, well, you should have fed the dog, you know, but it's like, well, you have to put gas in the car. Oops. It's going to help us talk with these words on the right, which are going to help instead of hurt. So it's sam@samhorn.com. And you can even put it by your laptop before you fire off an email or something like that. You can review this in advance to make sure that you're using words that are going to create receptivity instead of resentment.
Oh, I love this so much. And grab Sam's book. I think it'll shift you in one read of it. It shifted a very important conversation I had, and I'm grateful. And if you need to put these, if you guys need to figure out why you're not converting maybe the first date to the second date or the second date to the third date, you might need some help. Sign up on our website, smartdatingacademy.com. We can help you across the board to put more love into the world and to get more love back, to convert those dates and to find the lid to your pot. So, and if you haven't filled out our podcast listener survey yet, please do that. It's also in the show notes. We want to keep bringing back amazing guests like Sam. And most importantly, the people that you want us to bring on to help you to bring more love into your life and more life into your love. So until next week, smart daters, I bid you farewell.
Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love, follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.